Last week, Dr. Tiffany Schubert and I discussed Inferno, the first book of Dante's Divine Comedy. And I left you with our friend and former colleague Jason Baxter's remark that in Inferno, quote, Dante's poetic violence is meant to melt down the hard heart so that it can be reforged into something new, close quote. Purgatorio, the second book, is the place where that melted down and now malleable heart finds the forge, the place where the hammer of suffering purges all impurities and fashions hard hearts into hearts perfected to the point that, quote, not to act as it chooses is unworthy, close quote. And finally, Paradiso shows us the path of choosing the good, the true, and the beautiful habitually, as we gaze on the face of God eternally lost, as the hymn writer put it, in wonder, love, and praise. Dr. Schubert.
Purgatorio, I like to think of it as, and this is not original to me, but as an education in love and in freedom. One of the first things that happens in Purgatorio is that Dante and Virgil meet an old man. And we don't know who this old man is right away, but eventually realize that this is Cato the Younger, who committed suicide, who did not submit to Caesar, and who was a pagan. So he's got at least three strikes against him for being in Purgatorio on the mountain, but here he is.
In a position of authority.
And in a position of authority, yeah. That's right. He seems to have a special status as guardian of the shores of Purgatory. His job is to move souls who are holding back or kind of slothful, move them forward. And one of the things we learn about Cato is that he dies for the sake of freedom. And this seems to be part of the reason that Cato is in a special place. And so then we go up into Mount Purgatorio, and we see the souls in the mountain, on the terraces of the mountain. They're undergoing this education of becoming free. They're also undergoing very fundamentally an education in love. And really, right, for Dante, freedom and love are tied together. Oh, to be free is to have your loves in order, to love the right thing, and then be able to pursue that love with total abandon, really. And so this is what the souls are being educated in. And the mountain is divided up between the sort of seven cardinal sins, pride, envy, wrath, sloth, avarice, gluttony, and lust. And in each of these terraces, you have souls who are undergoing not a contrapasso, not kind of a manifestation of their sin, but a corrective suffering that's training them in the virtue that they really failed to grasp. But they are also gazing or hearing or sometimes reciting examples of both the vice that they were inclined to, and also the virtue that they need as an antidote. So suffering is a big part of the education of the souls, but art and particular narratives, right, story is an incredibly important part of the education. Music as well, there's singing of hymns and the recitation of scripture, all of this is sort of part of the education. You know, talk to the students about the fact this is kind of Dante's, you know, his college experience is in Mount Purgatory. Right? He's sort of getting his degree in moral maturation on this mountain.
Yeah, well, I've said to people who don't believe in a literal purgatory that this is just the story of sanctification. This is how God makes us holy.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. This is of the three canticles. Yeah, it is the one that sort of is most like our lives. It's the one that where time is actually matters. We're back under the stars. The sun comes up and goes down. Dante sleeps in Purgatorio. He falls down a lot in Inferno, but he doesn't sleep. So there's this return to kind of the natural rhythms of life, and so it is very much the story of souls being shaped and formed and sanctified and made holy and prepared to see God, but not yet actually.
Well, one of my favorite texts in the Purgatory is near the end of Canto 27, when Virgil says to Dante, "You are free from the steep way, free of the narrow. Look at the sun shining before you. Look at the fresh grasses, flowers, and trees, which here the earth produces of itself. You may sit down or move among these until the fair eyes come, rejoicing, which weeping bid me come to you. No longer wait for word or sign from me. Your will is free, upright, and sound. Not to act as it chooses is unworthy. Over yourself, I crown and mitre you." Tell us about what's happening there.
This is a splendid moment. It's a moment, these are Virgil's final words in the poem, the final words to Dante. And he begins by telling Dante, "I've taken you through the internal and the temporal fire. I've taken you through purgatory, and I've taken you through hell. And I've come as far as I can guide you. And you are now, at this point, able to follow your pleasure, because your pleasure, your desire, has been educated, and now it's oriented towards the good. So you can do whatever you want to do because you want to do the good." And this is, you know, this ultimate statement, or at least Virgil's ultimate statement about freedom. And then Virgil declares him really king, or even emperor and bishop over his own soul. Dante has reached a place where his will is free, and he can now govern himself as a free person. And so it's the sort of completion of Dante's ethical education, as education of the will, and then also a completion of Virgil's role as guide. This is Virgil's, as I said, right, Virgil's last words. And those last words are words, some of them words he's been saying to Dante all along, which is, "Look, yeah, look at the sun, look at this garden." And Virgil has been all along directing Dante's gaze, telling him to look here and look there, or don't look there, or don't look there too long. And here, you know, one of the final things that he does is as Dante's guide is to tell him to look, but he tells him, "You can choose where to look now. You have this authority and power over yourself in a way." Although, of course, immediately after this moment, well, not immediately, I suppose, but very shortly after this moment, Beatrice shows up, and Virgil's incredibly optimistic and triumphant speech is kind of called into question in some ways by the way that Virgil, or the way that Beatrice treats Dante.
I've been reading Paradiso this week. I'm a little ahead of your students. And I'm reminded of how many smiles there are and how many references to joy when he is in the circle of Venus. They gather around him and said, "Oh, look, somebody who can help us love even more than we do." And they're all excited. He describes Beatrice's smiling and the radiance of it. Could you comment on all that?
Yeah. Right. Eyes and smiles, but both are so important for Dante. Part of what's going on, I think, there is that Dante is drawing on the tradition of courtly love and of courtly love poetry. And in that tradition, the beloved's eyes and her smile are incredibly important. And get a lot of poetic attention. So Dante takes this sort of secular love tradition, and then what he shows us, or the way that he uses it, the way that he transforms it in his relationship to Beatrice, is that Beatrice's smile becomes this, yeah, a great expression of paradisal joy, as well as the vehicle for God's grace to come to Dante, and also the way that it's an expression or a vehicle of beauty, of divine beauty, that's drawing him up to God. And as he goes up in Paradiso, he is capable of gazing into Beatrice's eyes more and more and beholding her smile more and more. So his intellect is being strengthened and and his practice of the theological virtues is also being strengthened so that he can actually receive the divine presence that's embodied in her eyes, that's embodied in her smile. But again, he's drawing the focus of that from the Corley love tradition, and he wants to transform that into something else, what with Beatrice.
Well, now, of course, once Dante gets to the very heights of heaven, Beatrice is suddenly gone. She relinquishes her place as his guide to be replaced by Saint Bernard. Is this saying something about that courtly love? Is this some kind of a transformation of that love into something else?
Yeah, but Beatrice is already a transformation of courtly love. She's already a theologized treatment of that dynamic where the woman is this moral exemplar who is leading and guiding the man upwards. Dante transforms that secular motif into the theological motif. I think part of what happens there, well, of course, right, Dante has this, it's really a very beautiful farewell to Beatrice and expressing his gratitude for her role in his salvation. He says, right, she led him out of slavery and into freedom, and gives her a parting poem. And then what he says is that at that point, she had become so beautiful that she had exceeded his poetry. So it, in a sense, it's sort of less about, I think about a critique of Beatrice, and in a way more about the fact that she now has ascended to such heights that she is beyond Dante's poetry. He can't actually write poetry about her anymore. And then with the coming of Bernard, Dante loved Bernard very much, was really indebted to him. And Bernard, of course, had a special Marian devotion. And
this is Bernard of Clairvaux.
That's right. Yes, this is Bernard of Clairvaux. That's right. And Dante, I think what Dante needs to learn is how to write love poetry to another woman, to a higher woman, Mary. And of course, we know that Mary is the one who initiated that game of telephone that I had mentioned earlier. She is the one who goes to Lucy, who then goes to Beatrice, who then goes to Virgil. And so he actually has to turn himself towards Mary and write poetry to her. And then that is what he does at the end.
And then she points him beyond herself.
That's right. And then she points him beyond herself. Yeah. And then even when he beholds the Trinity and God, their smiling comes up again. We actually get a reference to, I can't remember the exact phrase. It's like love smiling on itself, or the Trinity is smiling on itself. So this image from courtly love actually becomes part of God's love for himself. It becomes part of this Trinitarian love. It's incredibly bold thing for Dante to do. So there are times, yes, he's very critical of courtly love tradition. You see some in like Paolo and Francesca, where we get the really vicious elements of the tradition. But Dante's going to transform it and sanctify it and, in a sense, take it all the way up to God himself.
If you've never read Dante's comedy, let me encourage you to give it a try. Choose a modern translation. Our students read the Hollander translation, and many people enjoy Anthony Esselin's version. And add to that a copy of Jason Baxter's book, A Beginner's Guide to Dante. Or you could take the college's distance learning course on the comedy with Dr. Baxter. Then find your way from your own dark wood to the place, as Dante writes, where my exalted vision lost all its power, but now my will and my desire, like wheels revolving with an even motion, were turning with the love that moves the sun and all the stars. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.